Welcome to Alphabet Scoop, episode 9. This is our second live episode, and as mentioned, our 9th episode of the show. And we are here in Mountain View, California. Well, I guess we're not in Mountain View at the moment because we're at
our pretty close.
Pretty close. But we will be in Mountain View later at day 2 of Google I.O. and just checking out everything else that Google has announced. Google had a big keynote yesterday, announced a lot with Android P, as that's probably the most popular topic of assistant news. JBL Link Bar, that was announced Monday. There's just so much going on. And so let's just jump into it, jump into our thoughts on what's going on. This is Abner Lee, and he's joining us as usual. And this is Seth Weintraub, founder of the 9to5 Sites, and joining us for the very first time on Alphabet Scoop. How's it going?
Excited to be here.
Good. Likewise.
Yeah, me too. I think it's been a pretty exciting week. So what's our first topic of discussion? We got
the tone of the keynote.
Yeah, so that's one thing that is pretty noticeable this year, is that the general tone of the keynote is pretty different. Last year and the years past, it just seems like Google is primarily focused, at least last year, on AI and just all of the radical advancements they're making with Assistant and with all the different AI and machine learning technologies that they have that are kind of giving them a leg up on the competition. And this year, it seems like, in light of just a general shift in tone in the industry as well, they're focusing more on how they can be careful about these technologies.
Yeah. Responsibility was the theme that was touted by a report yesterday, and I think we definitely saw that with features like digital well-being and well-being.google, like a new major initiative on how to live better with technology. That was a major push for them on stage.
Yeah, and even subtle things like Pretty Please for kids, mm-hmm. and other just small pieces of the whole AI landscape. That being said, they did scare quite a few people with their duplex features. So I don't know if we jump into
both
that.
Things happened at the right. same time. Yeah. So as Seth's saying, basically we're seeing this ideology, the bigger ideology of Google. You know, I think Sundar said specifically that Google feels the weight of this responsibility to get it right. There's obviously privacy implications, but it felt like kind of the tone yesterday was more about the implications of AI and how it's just going to change our world and our lives. And Sundar was pretty straightforward about saying, Google feels this burden of like they know that they're kind of leading the pack with machine learning and AI. And so they know that they're kind of,
That's a very good point. The privacy is a very good point. In light of Facebook, you think that if they're going to be a more socially conscious company, it would be about privacy, but no, they didn't even want to enter that discussion. So then the bigger picture,
not yet.
Until they're forced to, I guess.
Yeah.
They didn't even want to be in that discussion.
Yeah.
But the thing, the threat, the issue they're seeing being more is interacting with technology.
Yeah. So I guess let's just jump in with the very wide array of AI technologies they announced. First up was the very first thing they talked about was Smart Compose in Gmail, which is basically Google's going to write your emails for you now.
Yeah, and they've already kind of jumped into that with the Smart Replies, mm-hmm. And those, I find those very, very helpful. I don't know if you've gotten responses from me that kind of seem like that, but and it's not
right. This morning I was emailing Google PR and I just used like 2 smart replies and I was like, boom, done, send, done. Like,
yeah. And so, I mean, that's kind of an extension of that.
Yeah.
And, smart replies are a good way to start sometimes. So, sometimes like, thanks, that's a good idea. And then you can type in the rest of your stuff. I imagine that's going to just continue to grow go into other Google apps as well.
Yeah. So the Smart Compose, it seems that it's coming first on Gmail on the web because you're supposed to be able to tab when you agree with the suggestion it's offering. You tab and you can keep tabbing until you need to enter your own personalized.
It's obviously still to be seen how good this is because if it's not good at first, then people are probably going to turn it off because if it's just getting in the way. But
I have a feeling it's going to be good.
You think so?
And it'll be fun to just do tap until you have a whole paragraph.
Yeah, maybe in a few years you'll just be able to it just knows exactly what you
need. Yeah, I mean, I don't even think it'll be that long. It'll be, I mean, you know.
No, I'm saying, like, you could write an entire email just, like, tap, 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 because yeah. Google knows you that well. Yeah. Yeah. So
you need us. Why do people need to be even interacting with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the natural thing, I guess we could talk about Chrome Duplex, too, because that was a big...
That's the big one. I think that's the one that people are really talking about right now, because it's so scary, like, how well... The two examples they gave,
yeah.
How well it interacted with the people who weren't like terribly, you know, helpful. Like it kind of had to work around their not understanding. I think the second woman wasn't a native speaker, and the first one wasn't like, you know, getting the information correctly.
Yeah.
So that was
yeah,
you know, super impressive. Obviously, Google picked
cherry picked.
Yeah, they
the best
or the best examples.
Yeah.
They may have tried 1,000 times. You know, a lot of people, myself included, kind of were upset that Google didn't announce that, hey, this is an assistant beforehand.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps I talked to a Google rep off the record yesterday, and they mentioned, you know, on background that likely when the product comes out, it'll say something like, hi, this is X's Google Assistant, blank, blank, blank.
You calling know, on their behalf.
Calling like, on yeah, their yeah. behalf. So the person on the other end of the line knows that they're talking to Google Assistant AI and not an actual person.
Yeah.
And the ums and the okays and the...
Yeah, I had a big problem with that. It seems super disingenuous. Like, they're doing ums and like that just to make it more natural to make for the person receiving end.
It's interesting. I think you make a good point because, you know, you say that, you know, Google is going to make it clear to users that this is not real, right? Mm. But at the same time, it seems like they are trying to trick people or not trick, but they're trying to make it as real as possible.
So it's
to
like
where it's like, to where it's indistinguishable.
On the scale right.
So it's like, yeah.
Like,
but does that make the person on the other end more comfortable if it feels like they're talking to a human?
At least or less comfortable. I don't know.
Right. Or yeah. Like just freaked out.
Still to be seen. Yeah.
So, okay. The last charitable view of this is it's just an advanced phone calling system. Like we've had that for ages.
Right. Yeah. Like
robocalls.
Yeah. Robocalls. Yeah. It's a better version of robocalls. You can right. call your pizza place or whatever, and it sounds like you're talking to a real person.
Right.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think the concern is, and I, you know, I've seen this on Twitter, is that Google can weaponize this technology.
Mm,
and, yeah. And you know, with the Cambridge Analytica stuff, we know that if you have people's background information, which Google has, you can kind of sway their opinions a little bit with subtle Facebook posts in that case. But Google, you know, could call people on, you know, they
yeah.
could, like the Democratic or the Republican Party could, you know, grab this technology and
yeah.
and just, you know, and Google could say, hey, you know, do this 100 times. And where people hang up or people get, you know, don't do what makes people hang up or what turns people off, and kind of learn how to convince people of a, you know, topic. And
yeah.
and it's really kind of scary where this could go.
Yeah.
And what's, you know, scary is right now, using what Google already has, they have the ability to do something kind of scary today.
Right.
I mean, I don't think they will. And I think they would get caught if they tried. But, you know, it doesn't, you know, this is what they demonstrated. So they could have even more stuff that.
Yeah. And I think the interesting conversation to have is kind of the societal impacts as when this technology, I mean, we're seeing it from Google in 2018. How many companies will have access to this kind of AI in 2028
okay.
you know, or 2025 or 2020 even, you know, like. Other governments, as we've seen, you know, the stuff going on with the Russia scandal, et cetera, you know, like, and the 2016 election is like, the implications get wider and wider, the more hands have access to these things.
Right.
And so, you know, that's, yeah, it's pretty scary. I'm not all too concerned that Google's going to do anything malicious in the near term,
mm-hmm.
you know, but looking at 10 years and other organizations having access to similar kinds of technologies, with Google obviously on the forefront of developing them, you know, it just kind of connects back to Sundar saying, you know, we feel a burden to get this right, you know, to make sure that these technologies, as they come out and as they roll out and come out into broader society and into culture that they have positive impacts. That was another thing. It was interesting. Do you remember what the tagline at the very beginning of the show was? Make good things or something like that. You know, or make good things together. And that's some very interesting spin on the be together, not the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of Android brand, but they're putting this like positive spin. Don't just make good things. No, don't just make things. Make good things. Make positive things.
Right.
It's just really interesting to see the different or the you know how Google is saying that at the same time, initially in the long term.
Right. So. Right. And it depends on what side of the you know Apple Google spectrum you lie. Like if you're a big Apple fan, you know oftentimes you're very wary of Google and their model and you know you being the product and you know, all that stuff. But if you're you know a big Google user and you enjoy the products and you don't mind being advertised to very well, maybe you're less afraid of Google going rogue.
Yeah. Mm. So what's next?
Google Duplex is a natural. We'll live in Google Assistant with testing starting this summer.
Yeah.
So, but Assistant received a ton of announcements, like we expected, as we speculated on last week's podcast. So one of the major, it started off with new voices. I believe Google said that 6 new voices are coming. Mm-hmm. They're powered by advanced.
People got a kick out of the John Legend stuff, yeah. I think.
So that was dystopian to me. That was like the first dystopian thing that happened to me. Like the idea that these celebrities can like give their voices. So there's like questions of who owns the voices when those voices aren't just saying scripted responses, but they can be made to say anything. Like the lights, there's an issue. That could be a future issue. There.
John Legend is a brave man, I think, to be the first person that's doing this with Google. Because
Well, I mean, there's been voices and ways.
Well, yeah, true, yeah. For sure.
And here, you know, here's another like interesting like once somebody dies, can you use the recordings?
Yeah.
You know, like, could you use Franklin Delano Roosevelt's speeches and put together?
Does it become distasteful?
Right.
Or disrespectful or whatever.
Or who owns those rights?
Yeah, who owns the rights? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting future.
Hopefully we won't have to deal with that with John Legend anytime soon.
Right.
It's something to think about.
So features at the pop maybe less impacting society. So multiple actions, that's so you can combine actions into one phrase. So.
Yeah. Google talked about and how it's like not so easy to you can't just use the word and to differentiate between the two different actions because you know you could have a question that has the word and in it that's only asking one question or you could use the word and that it can mean two different things and so they pointed that out.
So it's a hard problem in their opinion.
Yeah.
We had continuous conversations so you no longer have to say the hard word every single time and you can just jump right into your next query. So that's
can we talk about that one? Do you get annoyed with like Hey Google, saying Hey Google. Sorry, hot word.
Yeah, everybody's phone's
going out. Does that annoy you? Like saying hot word when you're doing multiple queries?
It's hard to say. I feel like it's not a big issue for me, but like as we use it more and more, it will. I was kind of hoping they would come up with a new hot word.
Yeah, that's
they joked about it though.
Yo Google
thing. They in one of the reels they. One of the guys was saying, "Yo, Google."
Yeah, Kevin Durant.
We've seen some evidence. There's little hints and pieces in our APK Insight posts where we've seen evidence that Google might be exploring doing a second keyword or hot word. So,
I think if they shorten, I mean, when you think about all the times you have to say "Yo, Google" or "Hey, Google" or "Okay,
right.
Okay, Google." Sorry, everybody. You know, everybody's doing that like a million times every day. Like
the most, if they could just say landing exercise,
yo goo
at the same time,
yo goo or hey goo or just goo, something very short,
something simple. Yeah,
fewer syllables,
the better. Basically,
fewer syllables, and I guess it would have to be kind of unique so you don't accidentally say it.
If we could set our own like, hey computer, would like. Having people say Google in public anywhere, everywhere, is like a brilliant branding thing.
Oh, yeah.
Would they let you change, stop saying the word Google? We've seen them, like, be okay with okay or hey Google, but like, would they?
I don't know. I bet it's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Because you're right. It is ingraining, you know, in 5-year-old kids are using these things, you know, and learning how to say okay Google as some of their first words, you know. And so there's definitely they're teaching people about the brand from a young age. And so, but I think Amazon doesn't do that. No, so at
Amazon
all.
Will let you say Echo.
And interesting.
That's very easy to say.
Yeah. Echo. And even Alexa is easier than
Alexa, Amazon, Echo, or Hey Computer.
Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, I would like it if Google would let us give our thing a name, because I think that saying Alexa to an Amazon Echo is Google's been talking. They're talking about making conversations natural and human as possible. And yet we're addressing this computer as, hey, multi-billion-dollar corporation brand name.
Right.
But we're not saying, you know, the name of
strongly believes that you shouldn't personify these things. Like, that's like this, the common critique Siri is a thing, is like a personality.
Yeah.
Alexa's a personality. They've like come at the forefront of like, no, this is not a person, this is a service.
Well, at the same time, they're making it as human as possible.
Right, and the pretty pleased part is kind of making it, humanizing it a little bit.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of humanizing. And the John Legend thing even is like
pretty. So maybe that is a stance change.
Yeah, there might be a shift there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and they also, after the Kevin Durant video where he's like, yo, Google, the guy said, I can't remember his name, said that it's not easy to make a keyword. Like, it's not just like a couple of,
it's
a pretty big deal.
Because it's partly built into the hardware.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Seth mentioned Pretty Please. So this is a part of their well-being aspect. So kids who are using these smart speakers, they might get bossy. They might be get rude, be bossy, because they're just like issuing commands constantly.
Yeah.
So Google's announcing a new Pretty Please feature as part of their Family Link suite of kid-focused features, where it encourages kids to say please and thank you, and there's like a reward system from assistant.
Yeah, and as a parent, I'm very appreciative of this, because my kids, actually sometimes my kids will say please or whatever
by them naturally.
Naturally, and I don't want that to stop, and having that being rewarded would be good. And I think, you know, if kids are going to be using this from a young age, like having that ingrained in them will let them take it out, you know, to the world and use that, you know, the polite words. Additionally, the smart speaker, because it, you know, needs you to enunciate properly and speak clear and whatever, it also teaches them when they're talking to people to enunciate a lot better than so I'm glad to see,
you have a unique perspective that we don't have.
I think
it's really cool how they're, you know, they're not making it like a require my kids to say please if they want to use the Google Home or whatever.
Right.
It's more of just like a passive, like gentle positive reinforcement and encouragement of saying, you know, like thanks for being, you know, polite. And that's, I think
that's just like human interaction.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Another aspect of where it seems like they're humanizing the assistant.
It's funny because like Alexa, like their kids mode, like tones down the enunciation. Like kids can be way more out there with the words and the hard words and how they ask the questions. So
yeah, I wonder if Google will be able to recognize in the future a kid's voice versus an adult voice, like a human can, and kind of tailor its results.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying like not safe for work type of stuff, but maybe like asking a science question instead of giving the deep dive, just give the high level.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Because the same question, you know, how far away is the moon, could be explained to an adult in a different way than a kid. You know, detecting that it's a kid, they might say, you know, they could say it in some. Sorry, I'm hitting the table apparently. So sorry about that. If that's affecting the mic, I'll stop doing that. That's a good point. It'll be interesting to see if they can train those models to differentiate.
I'm sure they're working on it.
Probably.
It's the kind of, I mean, a lot of those engineers have kids, so I'm sure they're like, we should just do this.
Yeah. So moving on from assistant, there is a new Google Lens feature, which is real-time analysis. So basically, you no longer have to hold and pause. And like currently, Google Lens, you basically have to take a picture and it takes a second to analyze. In the future, Google, at the moment you pan your camera onto an object, it'll start scanning, start loading results. And Google said this was a combination of machine on-device machine learning and their advances in cloud TPUs and cloud processing. So Google Lens saw that development. But
yeah, I think that's like an AR. They haven't really explicitly said the word like augmented, or they, I guess they do sometimes, but
they did when the mounts came out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But there's lots of AR stuff happening that I guess we might not connect with it being AR because in our heads we think of AR as like Google Glass or some kind of like heads up display or VR. You know, think of it in that way. But they're doing a lot of AR stuff with phones. Another thing was the Google Maps thing, where like they're completely redoing walking directions. And they specifically mentioned that like tough moment where you're like trying to walk around the city or whatever, and they had a little blue dot.
Yeah,
and he was like saying, you know, walk.
You get 10 feet that way to see.
Where the heck am I? Yeah, exactly. And so now they're trying to combine the street view data, which they obviously have images of the whole country and whole world, with to let that guide your directions in addition to GPS. So you can use the camera on your phone and it can get a sense of where you are spatially in the world and help you navigate to your destination that way.
Tracking stuff is super interesting. I think they call it VPS, visual positioning system.
Visual positioning system, yeah. That'll be interesting.
That'll be super helpful. I can't wait to use that.
That's for consumers, that's super obvious, but there's also like the businesses like install navigating. Like I think that was a Pendle thing, like a possible use of
Pendle. Oh, yeah. I think they mentioned that.
Install demos.
Indoor navigation.
Indoor navigation, yeah. So that's a quiet.
We're already seeing bits and pieces of that, you know, in some of the, you know, hotspot touristy areas.
In
cities and stuff, you know. Yeah. So, that's going to be cool. Although I will say that looks like the worst battery killer feature.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, camera plus a GPS plus, you know, like that's
not only that, but it's recognizing businesses too. And like,
right. It's overlaying business.
So that's a lot of data going back and forth.
Yeah. Too. A lot of data. Yeah. So
that's part of Google Maps, which announced more personalization. They're using machine learning to personalize, restaurants you might be interested in.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that.
It's like a your score feature that percentage of how much you'll like the thing based on your past history and other people.
We'll have to see how good that is, because they're adding on to the traditional star rating system to say, you know, you get a star rating, you think everyone agrees is a good place, but you know, is it good for you?
Right.
So
again, going to the parent thing, like if I want to go to a restaurant, it would be nice if like it's a quiet restaurant that doesn't appreciate like loud kids. Like my kids would just, you know, annoy everybody. Like I don't want to go to that restaurant. So like if it's that's something that Google asks you, like, is this a good place for kids?
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, I won't get those results.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing, one feature I feel like Apple just can't do right now. Like they don't even have the ability to do it if they wanted to. I mean, cause like what data is that pulling from? It's probably pulling from your Google Maps history, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's probably the primary source. Like what kinds of restaurants you go to.
Yeah.
Theoretically, it could also pull from like Gmail, you know, right? Like potentially, like it could see, you know, like, you know, an assistant pulls from your Gmail to give you heads up for flights or whatever. You know, it could see, you know, if you're mentioning going to a restaurant with a buddy, and it sees you mention that restaurant a lot in your Gmail or whatever. I mean, maybe that could influence the model too.
So many factors.
There's like so many factors with Google's approach to privacy that give it this leg up in the
genuine use.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah. Another conversation that people are having is, why are people like not as mad at Google as they are at Facebook? And
it's a value, it's an immense
value. Yeah. So like features. Right. So like Facebook steals your data, and their reasoning is, we'll make your experience better, which really means we'll serve you more relevant ads, which, you know, arguably doesn't really make your experience better. It doesn't really add any value to your life. Whereas Google's argument is, we take your data, but we genuinely make your life better.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that's, I think that in my case, I feel comfortable. I feel kind of okay with as long as my data is anonymized, which I think Google does, you know, like in most cases.
Yeah. Know, so, but, I mean, you have to, like, you know, Google's never been even like accused of using your data anything for anything else than showing you better ads.
Yeah.
And there's the whole Wi-Fi Street View cause that scandal. And I think they really learned from that accident, which was most likely an accident.
Well, it might've been, you know, a couple of employees saying, oh, we're going to collect some interesting information, but I don't think Google as a whole, I don't think it was their plan to do something like that. And they were pretty adamant about fixing it right after it came out. So, you know, as far as I know, Google's never been like accused even seriously accused of using your data for anything else than showing you more relevant, you know.
Yeah. That's the worst dirt we have on Google.
Right. They fully admit it. And that's their business model. And they're like, you know, we're using your data to give you better ads, which pays us more.
Yeah. And I guess that raises the question too of, we haven't really talked about this. I don't think many people have really talked about this. Is Google eventually going to start monetizing Assistant? Because they've got to.
But maybe they do it in different ways.
Yeah. We've seen hints and bits and pieces of like Disney stuff popping up here and there, right. And so.
But they're super cautious about that. Everybody in the smart speaker space is cautious about. Amazon being the most notable example.
That's the way monetization goes broadly, though. You know, it's like bring as many people in as possible and then later figure out the money part.
Yeah.
You know, next up, I think Google talked about Google News.
Yes.
Which we showed you the icon a few days before I/O. And actually, of all the icons we grabbed, we had Google Maps or Google News was the only one that showed up
on stage.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So this Google News, again, smart AI is at the foundation of it. It tries to surface more news based on your interests. It replaces Google Play Newsstand, actually the update that's rolling out now.
Playstand's gone.
So this is actually a pretty controversial thing for me because, you know, we're already in American culture. We're already talking about how we're in our bubbles. Like the Fox News people only want to hear right-leaning stuff. Mm-hmm. The MSNBC people only want to hear left-leaning stuff. So this, you know, if we take Google at its word, it's only going to give us left politics, you know, if we're lefties, and right politics if we're conservatives. Yeah. So... Mm-hmm. That's not good. Like we should.
Yeah, hear. catering news to users might not necessarily be a good thing.
They tried to talk about that briefly. I think their thing was like, according to their research, they found that the best way, something about informed decisions, making sure everybody has the same set of information. So like their thing was like, the news that Google News will surface to people is from trusted media organizations, but then again,
that was clearly
another thing.
Clearly, a jab at the fake news situation.
And that's something that Facebook's facing right now is how does it determine what's trusted and what's not? Because trust is such a subjective kind of thing. You know, like you know, someone who's super right wing may say, "I really, really trust Breitbart." You know, and they may not have factual information. Someone left wing may really, really trust, you know, some left wing publication that might not always have the right, you know, facts. And so,
and those organizations skew facts, like
So. And they may be both factually right, but the bias spin. Might be
spin. Yeah, you can eliminate a lot of stuff, and all of a sudden you're getting very opinionated.
Yeah, so maybe Google needs to use their machine learning algorithms to take every single source of news from the whole spectrum and just give you the bullet points.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. No, neutralize the news.
We saw a tweet, I think it was from Owen Wilson, a week ago or so, that you were reading something, I don't know if it was in Google News or
Amazon. Oh, suggestions.
And it suggested related content
from other sites.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as a publisher, that's like, you know.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you don't want
You're going to send my readers to other sites?
Right. So, you know, that's that's another thing to think about with Google News. Is that how it's going to be? If somebody goes to, you know, our site and then they go to, you know, Google suggests our competitors, which, you know, maybe we don't want that, or you know, it opens a lot of questions for publishers. I think it's a little concerning. Another thing for publishers that they have is that one click subscription for people who opt into Google's
subscribe at Google,
right? And then I think Google takes a cut of that or something.
Yeah.
So typical, like.
Yeah.
They say they love the news. Like they say there's like company wide initiatives to back news, but
yeah, they did a throwback saying that Google News originally was.
Yeah.
However many years ago.
Oh, quite a long time
ago. A long time ago.
It was like one of the first publicly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the Gmail era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So moving on from Google News is Google Photos. So the main announcement was Smart Actions. So Smart Actions, it actually looks at who's in the photo to suggest who to share it with. Then there's new editing features. There's this really cool thing about adding color to old photos. I think that got a huge reaction from people.
Yeah, a lot of the things that Google's adding to photos are not necessarily brand new things. You know, we've had colorization of photos before. Mm-hmm. We've had, you know, like the ColourPop thing they showed.
Yeah.
iOS 2 or whatever, there was some app. I forgot what it was called. Do you remember what it was called? There was some really popular app that just let you know, like you use your little finger and like drag it around the areas that you want colorized. I remember using that long time ago. And so it's not really that Google's doing new stuff. It's that Google's making it really easy, because Google Photos is, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I think us three just use it as a repository, just throw all of our photos.
Yeah. I mean, that's one area that for me, you know, I use both Apple and Google products, and it's just one area that Google just destroys. I mean, you could say the voice assistant too, but, Google Photos just destroys anything Apple related, and it's free, like, you know, of course on the product, I guess, but it's free and it's like 1,000 times better. And it does so many cool things that I can't even imagine having to use Apple's stuff specifically to manage my photos.
Yeah.
And all these cool new tricks. But that said, we brought up that last year Google showed off a feature.
Oh yeah,
in the keynote, which was removing a fence from a baseball picture that never came out. Like it never.
Yeah, they haven't mentioned it. Like it's just complete radio silence from them on it.
Yeah. And we were going to ask them about that yesterday, but we didn't have an opportunity to speak with
Maybe
them.
Maybe we'll get an answer on that today. We got to find someone to grill.
Yeah,
because it doesn't even seem like that. I mean,
maybe it just never got to.
Like it didn't. Yeah, it just like maybe didn't get to that point.
So, but it's weird that they didn't even mention it again this year. Like, we're just not going to do that. You know, that's just not going to be part of our situation. They'll just never get to the point where they can do that.
The other things were so like auto share. So like if it's able to see people in photos and just one tap send them off to whoever it is.
And the future we're going to find useful is document scanning.
Photos. Take a photo. It was interesting. The one they showed, we've seen document scanners before where you kind of have to have the phone like at the right angle and like hold it above. This photo they showed was kind of like off angle. It looked like they just had a piece of paper on a table and just clicked it. And then it was one tap and it just fixed the you know, the angle of the photo, and it cropped it perfectly and made it a PDF.
Yeah. I mean, there's been apps that did like PDF on iOS that do that, but now that's built into Google. It's going to be great. Yeah. I'm sure. I think if it's part of Photos, it'll probably be part of iOS. So like,
the
PDF scan pro guys are probably like, damn, you know, like, Sherlock.
Yeah. Sherlock. And then the big thing for Google Photos, just to round out this conversation, was the API. So there's a Google Photos library API now that Google introduced this week, which is basically going to let third-party companies and developers tie in with your photo library.
Mm-hmm.
One big example that we kind of got clued in on was a company called Legacy Republic. They basically do archiving and digitalization of your old photos. And so they're going to be working with Google and using this new API to tie into your Google Photos library. You basically box up all of your all of your
VHS,
your VHSs, your old vintage photos, everything. You just box it up, you send it off, and then I think the API access is what lets them basically just
actually like
it. They just put it right up in your photos library, what we heard is that they're partnering with an AI company to determine the general timeline of some of those photos, so it can actually use AI to determine what broad year range some of that content might have been from, based on the quality and the content. And actually, you know how like Google Photos has a timeline, right. It goes up. Apparently, it'll automatically just shove it in there to like 1940. Like, no, that's from 100 years ago.
I know that's impressive.
And obviously, it's making a best guess. You know, they don't. Yeah. And you
can change stuff too.
Yeah,
you can change metadata photos.
Yeah,
and videos.
So that'll be really cool to see.
So moving on, so legacy platform. So Android is 10 years.
Android, the legacy platform. It's still kicking. It's still a big deal. We had Android P announced a few months ago. In March, developer preview 1. But that announcement is typically just developer focused. So they're giving developers, you know, early heads up on here's all the APIs that are coming out and getting developers ready to put them in their apps and stuff. But yesterday's keynote was Google's kind of more user facing announcement. So there was lots of stuff. There was the new Nav. That's the big deal. And then, you know, other stuff like batteries and stuff like that. So what do you think about the new Nav?
Yeah. So we've installed it, all three of us.
Yeah, we all have it.
I mean, first, I guess, just spoiler alert, I don't think we would recommend that you install this on your mom's Pixel.
Yeah, right? Probably not. I mean, it's more stable than
the
than
first one
years,
was crazily stable.
Yeah,
I've been using that, and it's
for a first developer preview.
No, even I would go beyond that. It was shockingly stable.
Yeah, and this one's pretty stable too. But again, you're right. I mean, it's probably buggy enough that. Probably wouldn't recommend grandma, but my take on Nav is that it's terrible. I've been using an iPhone 10 for about 3 weeks now, so I'm late to the game on the iPhone 10 because, you know, I'm supposed to be a Google writer. I've been using it. I really like it. I really like the Nav, and this one is, it feels kind of like, so I don't know if anyone's used other Nav systems that have been introduced in various situations. I think OnePlus did one, right? Are kind of not, they're kind of like halfway. They're not really like if the iPhone 10's Nav feels like very like it's a very bold, you know, change.
Mm-hmm.
And they went all the way, it feels like, to me. I mean, it's smooth as butter in my mm-hmm. experience. I really like, I've just gotten used to flicking up from the bottom of the screen to go home.
Yeah.
And I actually, after a few weeks using the iPhone 10, I found myself trying to flick up from the bottom of the screen on my Pixel and being like, oh, what the heck? Why is it going? And then even now with the new Nav, the way you quit apps is still a button press. So that's kind of what I mean by, it's kind of halfway. It doesn't really truly embrace a fully gesture based Nav. It kind of does both. So there's the home button, which is now like a pill, which you still press to go home, and you still hold for Google Assistant. And then there's also a contextual back button, which pops up when you're in apps that might use it. And then you can swipe up from the pill to bring up the multitasking, and you swipe left with your thumb. And then to access the app drawer, so it's kind of confusing. There's to access the app drawer, you just normally swipe up from the specifically from the bottom row of icons to access
the home
app
screen.
On the home screen. But before it was more, you know, you could just swipe up from anywhere and that got you the app drawer. So now it's two different swipe up actions, generally in the same place, which is, I think, really frustrating and really confusing.
Yeah.
Because if you're just off, you can accidentally, you know, activate the multitask.
Yes.
Yeah. Lots of videos we saw on Twitter of people doing this. You can accidentally access the multitasking when you're trying to do the app store, or not app store, the app drawer, or vice versa. You can be trying to go for the app drawer and then get the multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ends up happening is a lot of times you're just like swiping twice or whatever. And it's just really, really annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last aspect is just how you quickly swipe between apps.
Mm-hmm.
So on the iPhone 10, you can just go like, it's kind of feels like the best comparison I would make is using the four fingers or whatever on the MacBook trackpad, wherever you have full screen apps and you can just, you know, swipe between them. That's exactly how it feels to me on using the swipe on the bottom of the iPhone 10 to just switch between apps. And I just love that. Like, it's just so fast. And and the iPhone 10 keeps so many apps in RAM that like just I never have any hiccups. But on this one, it's a weird pill that you drag. Like you drag it and then it like flicks to the next.
It's a slider.
It's a slider. It's literally a slider. And it's like
Who thought that's putting a slider in like the tiny.
Yeah. Not to mention the visual. It looks kind of bad because the slider is off to the right with the back button.
Oh,
on the
left side.
It's not symmetrical at all. So that's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, so my experience, I would rather just keep it off. And that's another interesting thing.
For the moment, yeah. In this developer
review, it's off by default.
Right.
So that's interesting.
That's not a lot of confidence.
Not a lot of confidence that this is going to be a thing. But I think...
Well, they only had since October to work on this, right?
Yeah. But I think with the Pixel 3, they might launch it with... They might say... And so... hopefully it gets better by then, because if it's not, if it's still an option in the settings menu and it's not better by then, I'll probably turn it off. But you know, disclaimer, I've only been using it for 24 hours, so maybe my opinions will change as I get used to it. But so far it just feels like a very hacky Android. It feels like Google's done a really good job of making Android more intuitive and more natural, and this just is not. It's not in that category to me.
Right, and it feels very early days. I will say, though, like, long-term, for those of us who use both iOS and Android, it is a good thing because we're now getting used to the iOS 10 menu system.
Yep.
And theoretically, Google will have a similar navigation system. So instead of having to go from a very, you know, a traditional Android experience to a flicky... system on iOS 10, iPhone 10, will have a similar on both, so we can move back and forth pretty easily without too many
hiccups.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So elsewhere in Android P, the artificial intelligence, machine learning was a big focus. Adaptive battery was the highlight. Working with the DeepMind subsidiary in Alphabet, they're only keeping the apps that you actually use in the background. So I think they have some stat about how many hours this extends battery life, but that's promising. Everybody wants more battery life. And adaptive brightness was the other feature. They noted that after turning on this feature, most users stopped ever having to adjust the physical brightness slider.
Mm-hmm.
And the other big thing was digital wellness. So there's a new dashboard in the Android settings app that tells you how often you're using apps, how many times you're unlocking, what notifications you're receiving. So this is a big push of responsibility.
And they also tweaked Do Not Disturb.
Yeah.
So Do Not Disturb doesn't just silence your notifications.
You don't see any.
You know, it's Do Not Disturb visually too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and putting the phone
face. Oh, yeah. And then what was that called? Shush? Yeah, shush. So now you can just put your phone face down when you're like at the dinner table or whatever, and it just automatically puts into that new Do Not Disturb mode.
Yeah.
So that'll be cool.
Yeah. And at night, there's this thing where a few months ago, the big thing everybody was doing was graying the screens to stop using.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That's like a trend that kind of went through the waves. We did a post on 9to5 Google how to enable black and white on Pixel, because, you know, a lot of people are doing that because, you know, what Google's talking about wellness is people are feeling like they're using their phones too much. And they talked about how whenever it's grayscale, it's just not as
enticing.
Right. It's not as addictive to use.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stimulate you as much, I guess.
Yeah. And also I can't remember if it was the same part of the presentation, but YouTube, if you've been watching it for an hour.
Yeah.
It says, do you really want to keep watching? Like,
are you really just going to keep watching?
You're kind of binging right now.
Yeah.
I think that seriously shows that they're serious about this digital well-being, because like they love touting how people keep watching YouTube as a new TV, as a new thing they keep in the background that's always on, just like auto-playing videos. And adding this feature to YouTube, a lot of people will put it in front of a lot of people. So that's a sign that they're not being cynical, that they are serious about this push to make people's lives better.
Yeah, and they're genuine and they're thinking long term, because, you know, of course they're going to get more views right now if they don't tell people that they've been binge watching. But maybe people were like, hey, you know what? I'm quitting cold turkey YouTube. So they want you to keep using, just use it responsibly.
Right.
You know, like just like the alcohol people.
Yeah, keep drinking, but drink
responsibly.
I never feel so judged when Netflix adds that feature. Maybe you shouldn't watch the 10th episode.
Yeah, Netflix already has that.
Yeah, they already say continue watching.
Yeah, are you still here?
Are you still here?
Are you still like?
I think that's the best way to guilt trip you. That's the best way to guilt trip you into quitting. Asking, are you still watching?
Are you comatose? Can you move or react right now?
Can you reach over and grab the remote and click the select button?
Right.
Whatever? Yeah.
So to close out Android P.
Well, before we do that, let's talk about material. So so. The most user-facing of user-facing things is a user interface. Google announced yesterday, well, before we talk about it, let's preface this a little bit. We've been seeing evidence of Material Design 2. I think it first popped up in Chromium, something that was a quote, some Googler,
MD2.
A comment that said MD2 or something. Everyone's like, oh, Material Design 2, it's like Google's revamping Material. The very first real thing we saw from Google directly was, I think, the settings app in the first developer preview of Android P. That was probably the first obvious, like, this is the first glimpse of what new material is going to look like. And so we've been talking about Material Design 2 for a few months now and watching as some apps that Google's been coming out with, Google Tasks, definitely look starkly different than a lot of Google's apps.
Gmail
on the web. The Google I/O 2018 app appropriately looks a lot different with that color nav bar and lots of Google Sans fonts and stuff, whiteface and stuff. And so that all led up to yesterday where Google announced Material Design Themes, which I wanted to explain this a little bit because I think a lot of people are confused on what exactly Google announced, because we've been talking about Material Design 2 for a long time. And then Google went up on stage and announced Material Design Themes. So Material Design Themes is for developers, pretty much. So like I/O is a developers conference, so it makes sense. Google announced a new framework, basically, an overarching framework that allows developers to make their apps more their own. I think that was one of the biggest complaints that developers had. Google mentioned this on stage, was that Material was too distinctly Google and didn't allow enough flexibility for developers to, you know, build their own look and really individualize their apps. And so Material Design Themes is Google kind of turning Material into more of a broader framework. You know, they're not forcing people to use all of their components in a certain way. They're more providing more broader general guidelines for, you know, creating a system that makes sense. It's based on motion, and Google says it's still based on this, or it's still inspired by the paper and ink metaphor from 5 years ago now, whatever. And so Material Design Themes is the framework. What we've been calling Material Design 2 is basically Google's Material Design Theme. You know, Twitter may have a Material Design Theme for their Android app. And what's interesting, too, is that Material Design Themes are not just for Android. Nope. They're for Android and iOS and the web. And then you can build Material Design Themes in Flutter, too. And so Google's really wanting to, you know, push this across platforms as a good new design language. And so Google's Material Design Theme is Google's take. That's why we see Google Sans. So Google Sans is Product Sans, basically, which is Google's proprietary font that they don't let anyone use, but they are now going to start using it a lot in their apps. Google's Material Design Theme is very starkly Google, and I think we're going to see that continue to roll out across Google's apps.
But from a philosophical standpoint, do you think apps like Twitter or Facebook that have their own design language across platforms should embrace Material Design on Android, or should they stick with their own design language? Or to take it even further, do you think that apps that, you know, just generic, you know, mom and pop apps should embrace Material Design and bring that Material Design over to iOS? I think probably not that.
It's probably not going to happen. I mean, it's probably optimistic at best. You know, we've seen it in some cases, but I think that's the entire point of what Google announced yesterday, is that they're like, we know this was entirely unrealistic before, and we're trying to make it kind of sort of possible now.
Right.
For developers,
if you want to do this, if you're a mom and pop type of thing, and you want to make it very easy to, you know, you don't want to hire a whole design, you know, a design team to design your own fonts and design your own everything. And this will kind of fit into the phone, you know, the Android phones, you know, language a lot better.
Right.
So yeah, that's probably what it's for. I don't think people should bring Material Design. I mean, Google should bring Material Design to their iOS apps because they're Google and that's how Google apps feel. I don't think third-party apps should take Material Design and bring it to iOS. iOS has its own kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
Yeah.
Material will probably win the web.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't know if... I think Seth is hitting a good point because a lot of these firms, they don't need Material. Like, they don't really care about Google's input because they have the influence and they have the resources to build their own.
Yeah, all these players, they don't have
it's really a branding thing, you know? It's like they have a brand and they don't... Submitting to doing Material is basically giving Google a piece of their pie.
Right.
Basically. But the Material Design themes, they're branding. They're trying to let these companies better brand the stuff.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. They're trying to make it more accessible by products.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you want to put like a real world metaphor on it, it's kind of like the Apple stores wanting the, you know, Logitech to make their boxes look like Apple store boxes.
Right.
Like it works in the Apple store, but like, don't do that at Walmart. Like that.
Right. And some of the smaller players might actually benefit from adapting to the new, because it might be better than what they can do.
Clearly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's what we're going to see. I think that we've seen some developers, Francisco Franco, we mentioned him last week. Mm-hmm. He's one of those developers that like is really, really hard on Material Design and his apps. He's got really nice looking apps that they look like they could have been made by Google itself. Mm-hmm. I think those kinds of developers, we might see an expansion of those kinds of developers adopt a Material Design theme. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that we're going to see Facebook appear in the next few months with a Material Design theme. Not going to happen. So yeah, that pretty much closes out Material and Android P, you know, which the new Material stuff is kind of sort of part of, but obviously broader implications. Google's seems like planning to an update. There's a lot of their apps that haven't gotten the new Material.
Yeah, and they showed some slides like Photos.
Google Photos is a big one. So during the keynote yesterday, Google Photos had a new look that we haven't seen yet.
And Google News is already has it.
Right. Yeah. So it looks like we're going to see a lot of other apps. I mean, like even stuff like, you know, the calculator app, all the system apps, they're not really adopting the new Google Material theme. And so we're probably going to see that come in the next few days, maybe. We're not sure. Hopefully I have more information on that later today. Android P, just round this out, Android P is coming to, you know, it's available right now for the Pixel phones. And
a lot more phones.
Yeah,
they expanded the Android beta program to be for Android, for other Android devices. So we're seeing the Sony Xperia XZ2, the Central phone, Nokia 7 Plus, Xiaomi Mi Mix 2S, and some phones from Oppo, Vivo, and OnePlus.
Kind of surprising LG and Samsung were on there.
Yeah, not the big players.
Lots of smaller guys
like Sony, Essential, Nokia.
I guess those are the very stocky type of phones.
I saw someone say that the DP2 preview on Xiaomi Mi Mix 2 doesn't have Xiaomi skin on it at all. It's just pure stock.
Well, that's a bonus.
Yeah, I know for sure. And then what do we hear about the Essential phone?
Oh yeah. So if you load the Android P preview on the Essential phone,
the current build at least,
Wi-Fi doesn't work.
So
who needs that?
So Essential phone, probably don't recommend that build at the moment. But that's an interesting thing is that the OEMs are handling all these, so not Google. So we're definitely going to see a little bit of disparity across functionality.
And truth be told, Essential is amazing at upgrading updates. So I would almost say like there's probably a build going around right now that fixes the Wi-Fi. Yeah,
probably.
So by the time...
It might even be live right now. I mean, this was yesterday.
Yeah, this is like a 24 hours ago.
By the time you're listening to this, Essential probably fixed the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, probably.
So yeah. So that was Android on phones. So very briefly, we saw Google announce Android P.
Android P on Android TV.
Yep.
It's kind of under the radar. They didn't mention that in the keynote, but they did talk about it at a Android TV, What's New in Android TV session yesterday. And so like there were lots of that kind of like, you know, not so user facing features. You know, they're working on performance. They're working on the start, the setup, the onboarding stuff. For Android TV,
but there was hardware news.
So there was the JBL Link Bar, which they announced formally Monday, but we got a chance to see in person yesterday, and I did a hands-on with it,
which is a really cool product.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's basically emerged Android TV set-top box
and
plus
Google Home
Max. We probably say it's like kind of a Google Home Max in terms of its sound output. So yeah, those two products had a baby and then added, you know, HDMI
input switch. But it's even more than Apple or Android TV because it's got the far field mics, which turn it into a,
That's the Google Home Max part.
The assistant part is
right.
Like, I mean, it's like, a really good assistant with a screen.
Yeah, for sure.
So, with a big screen, not just a, you know, small little Lenovo screen.
Right.
So, it's actually a pretty interesting product when you think about it. It's like it kind of changes the game and you know, what do you think it's going to cost? Anywhere from $200 to $1,000.
I guessed in my post yesterday $300, but I realized now that that's way too low.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like JBL apparently said that it's like going to be a flagship premium product. So we're looking at $1,000, like $700 maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, like in that price range. So Google, for Android P development on Android TV, the company announced ADT2, a new developer kit just for developers, just to test Android.
There were two developer kits yesterday, the Android Things 1.0, which we didn't really talk about, which it's not really that relevant to most people probably. It's the OS that runs on smart displays.
Yes.
And so they also added they gave everyone a Android Things developer kit. And we're planning to give away a couple of them, so stay tuned for that next week. Sorry, I mean to interrupt you.
So yeah, ADT2, again, that's just developer only. It's the FCC firing we saw a few weeks ago with a Google logo that caused such a furor. But yeah, that's developers only, so hopefully we'll manage to get one day and see how it is.
Yeah. Did they say anything about the mics on that thing? Or does it have mics? Or
it has a Bluetooth remote.
So
it's just a dongle.
So do you think the remote will have a mic?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we saw the remote in the FCC filing, didn't we?
Yep.
Yeah. It has a mic, I think.
Yeah. So that's Android TV. We expect some Wear OS news today because the What's New Wear OS session is just in a few hours. So that's rounding out Google's Android platform.
Right, the new Qualcomm chip.
Yes, that is related to I/O. They announced it for coming this fall.
Yep,
and it should lead for more power efficient, optimized devices because the current Android Wear OS devices are using a super old chip, and it's nowhere technologically close to what Apple is doing or even Samsung.
Yeah, and they said that it's going to launch on a premium Wear OS device later this year.
Yes. Premium smartwatch.
So maybe long shot, but maybe that's a Pixel Watch.
Oh, the dream.
It is a long shot.
And then the other thing is the LG Watch. So
yeah, we thought there was going to be an LG Watch.
It might still.
Oh yeah, there's still.
There's the Wear OS events later today. So we'll see what they talk about at that event. We'll clue you in on Notify Google.
Yeah, I mean the only small Android Wear watch out right now for women or for people who like small watches is the LG Watch Style.
And that's 42 millimeters.
Yeah.
Smallest.
Yeah, it's not that small either.
Right. But it's like in the reasonable for small people.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty much it. I mean, there was not really, I don't think there was really that much that we were expecting to see that didn't come.
Yeah, because a lot of it was pre-announced.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. A lot of it was announced last week. Heck.
Yeah. It was kind of interesting the way that it felt like everything that came before, like the week before, was pushed off the keynote. You know, they were going through the keynote and they're like, we're running long, got to cut out this, got to cut out that. Or, you know, an interesting choice that we didn't really talk about was they inserted, like, I don't know, say like 20 minutes, 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Of Waymo at the end.
Yeah, it went
over. Yeah.
This was supposed to be a tight 90-minute keynote, but it was went close to...
they went over for a 20-minute Waymo ad, basically.
Pretty much. And, you know, I'm all for Waymo ads as long as I get something new from it. But the really the only new thing that we didn't, you know about completely was this, you know, in the snow demo that they put on, which, you know, like...
It's a video.
I'm not thinking too hard about that right now. I, you know, I'm more thinking about the just the basics. But, you know, it was cool. Like, you know, there's a snowy picture. It showed the initial sensors, what they picked up. Mm-hmm. And then when you eliminate the noise, it kind of looked just like a normal day.
Yeah. The other thing was we shared, as I mentioned earlier in the show, some icons for some Google apps that are coming out. One of them was ads. So there's a new app. We got a new app or app icon for ads, and we haven't seen anything about that at the show so far. So as mentioned earlier, Google's probably planning to roll out new designs for across all of its first party apps for to take advantage of this new material design stuff. So maybe we'll see some more stuff in relating to those other apps that we just haven't seen mentioned. There's pretty confident to make the show.
We have two more days too.
Yeah, sorry. We've got two more days to go to sessions and hopefully find some unreleased features on phones that are sitting in demos and steal the Pixel latest unreleased versions of Pixel launchers off of them and tear them down and stuff. So anyways, thanks for tuning in. This has been episode 9 of Alphabet Scoop, coming at you from Google I/O 2018, here in Mountain View, California. And, stay tuned at 9to5google.com for all of your Google I/O related coverage. We got a lot more to come. We have a post up on 9to5google.com. You can find it in the link in the YouTube description below with all of our I/O coverage so far, covering all of the topics that we covered today. Thank you for tuning in. This has been me and Abner and Seth. And no Alphabet Scoop this weekend. We're going to take the weekend off and let this show serve as the replacement. But
we'll be back next week.
We will be back. We'll be back with next week with everything else that Google announces in the wake of I/O. So thanks for tuning in.
Bye.